But we're very much in the middle of the retreat, very much in the heart of the retreat now. And I thought it might be nice as a way of continuing to support your motivation to give you an advert break. Well, what's going on? But this is an advert you'll be pleased to hear for loving kindness meditation. And I always like this. It's from the Buddha, but we're used to sort of quite large claims these days, aren't we, from advertisers and the things they say. But actually this is right up there with many of the claims that are made. So imagine this is a product you were hearing about. Yeah? This is, you will sleep easily. You will wake easily. You will have pleasant dreams. People will love you. Devas, the celestial beings and animals, will love you. Devas will protect you. External dangers, poisons, weapons, and fire will not harm you. Your face will be radiant. Your mind will be serene. You will die unconfused, and you will be reborn in happy realms. So. And just to talk through these a little bit, because I think they're really helpful to reflect on, actually. But the first three obviously go together. You will sleep easily, you will wake easily, and you will have pleasant dreams. With all of these, of course, we need some intelligence as we think about this. I don't think it means every time and you'll never wake up in the middle of the night ever again. And but it does make sense to me that if we go about the day being harsh to other people, speaking harshly, acting in a way that harms others, and then put our head on the pillow and think, oh, now I'm going to have a nice peaceful night's sleep. It just doesn't work like that, yeah? That those actions, as well as being harmful to others, are very agitating to our own mind. And so again, the opposite is true with metta, with friendliness, that it's calming for the mind to be acting and speaking in that way, yeah? Can influence how we sleep, how we wake up, and the kind of dreams that we have. And then it says people will love you, you know. And again, let's be intelligent about this. I don't think it means every single person in every way at every possible time. Even the Buddha had people who, tried to harm him and didn't agree with what he was doing and things. But again, you can see on the whole, this is true. If we go about behaving in a way that's friendly to other people, then, you know, again, on the whole, we can find that's reflected back to us. Very simple example often comes to my mind is if you were going to a party. You imagine going to a party and you decided before you even go in, I bet nobody here is going to be interesting. You know, oh, I've got to go to this place. And, you know, if anyone tries to talk to me, I'll make sure I tell them I don't want to speak to them and things. But then if you contrast that to going to a party where you think, oh, well, I wonder who's going to be here. Maybe they'll be very different to me. Maybe they'll have different thoughts and views and opinions. But I'm going to go and, as best I can, be friendly and listen and see how it goes. And it's a very obvious example, but we can see which party we're going to enjoy more when we go in with those attitudes. And then it says, you know, devas and animals will love you. Well, yeah, it's not impossible for me to think that animals can pick this kind of thing up too. You might say picking up, you know, we use a phrase that we're picking up the energy. Yeah. And then devas will protect you. So devas, the translation used here is celestial beings, and you get these in the cosmology of Buddhist teachings. And again, different people approach these in different ways. Some people do have more of a sense of these devas, and other people, it's not really part of a worldview that would make sense. And again, I'm not here today to sort of push one view or another with that. But even if we do take a more metaphorical view, if you like, There is this phrase that we have in English, which is, you know, the gods are on our side today. You know that feeling? The gods are on our side today. And we know what that means, and we can sense that without thinking, who are these gods? Where are they? Give me some proof. You know, it's like, oh, actually. And there is a feeling that living with friendliness, again, in some ways, kind of creates our own luck, in a way. Opens up things that may otherwise not be there. My wife is a yoga teacher, and she was doing some training once, and I went to meet her after the training, and it happened that someone else on the training was also doing some work where she was looking for a meditation teacher. And anyway, just in this very short exchange, I was offered some teaching that I did for about 6 years. And I always think back at that. I mean, to be honest with you, I think she got me on a good day, right? There may have been other, I'm not saying I'm like in that space all the time, but there may have been other days where that wouldn't have happened. So I often think, so to the extent to which I was in a place that was friendly and for 3 minutes looked like someone who might be a good person to teach meditation, you know, actually opened up something that was quite long-lasting. And those, and that thing also then opened up other things. So there are these ripple effects. And then it says, external dangers will not harm you, poisons, weapons, and fire. And again, to state the obvious, let's not do loving-kindness practice and put our hand in the fire. I don't think it means that. But what it does mean is that it's actually a protection to live with friendliness, which again is the opposite of what we might think. In order to protect myself, I need to have, you know, lots of barriers up. I need to be very mistrusting. And if anyone says anything to me, right, there's going to be trouble. Actually, that's a very dangerous way to live. If you're living with that kind of latent hostility that's just there all the time and ready to respond quickly to any threat. Again, a memory comes back for me now of being in Nottingham and just being in a takeaway once, and somebody came in who was clearly in such a place of, just the hostility was just so close to the surface, and the way that they were asking about the food, it was like, oh, now I need more of that and less of that. And yeah, when's that? Is that fresh? And if you just cut that, and can I have a bit more of this? And the poor person serving was just doing their best. But I remember thinking, gosh, just the pain for everybody involved there, really. You know, the pain of just an ordinary thing, of going to buy some food, was just so shaped by this sense of hostility and fear. And, and other people can pick that up and may feel very threatened by that. So that, in a sense, is also something that can be dangerous for us, whereas friendliness is the opposite. We can see it as a protection. And then your face will be radiant, like this one. And for me, this always makes me think of Archbishop Desmond Tutu. There's one, but many people whose faces are radiant. But you know, this isn't the sense of kind of being youthful or attractive in a kind of standard airbrushed sense that we might be used to. But you can see sometimes, you know, people living in this way, living with love, living with friendliness, that it can express itself in the face, in a, what might we say, kind of glint in the eye or something, I don't know. Yeah. And your mind will be serene. Again, well, you know, we all have good days and bad days. Let's not say every moment of every day in every way. But on the whole, yeah, living with friendliness is something that supports a calm and still and gathered mind. One of the things that we do in our practice is to see the effects of doing different things and the effects that that has on our states of mind. So I know for me there's certain dramas that I might watch on TV, and I just notice that it can stir things up. So it might be the opposite of doing this kind of practice. I remember there was one that I was watching, and then every time I saw kids on a bike, I was like, it was sort of shaped by this drama where the kids on a bike were always up to no good. But so this is the opposite, something that's calming, settling. And I don't mean, by the way, never to watch a drama ever again, but it's just that sensitivity around the impact and effect on things. You will die unconfused. And again, of course, no absolute guarantees here, but there is the sense that if we live in a way that is more loving and caring, we're living a way where we're letting go of what we don't need, seeking to feel connected with ourselves, with others, with the world, that it makes sense to me that it's then easier to be with that process of letting go in the time of our life. And then finally it says you will be reborn in happy realms. So again, different interpretations of this. Again, traditionally it would be taught of many different lives, life, death and rebirth, and some people again have a strong sense of that and others may not. But we can even understand that in this life. And I don't know how this sounds to you, but you've kind of had a rebirth by being here. Yeah. Now, I don't know at the moment whether this feels like a happy realm to you. When the back is aching and the mind is busy, it may not do. But there is a sense that you have been reborn in this realm. Here we are. So you've fed something in your life that has meant that you're here now. And so again, it's like our actions are shaping this moment, but they're also shaping future moments. And if you'd made different choices, you wouldn't be here. You may not be hearing someone talking about friendliness and loving kindness. You may be hearing someone talking in a very different way, encouraging very different outlooks. So, it's a good thing to do, eh? It's a good thing to do. I also wanted this morning just to say a little more about friendliness to ourselves. And one of the reasons this is so important is because it frees us from what is sometimes called the self-esteem trap. And Kristin Neff, who writes a lot about self-compassion, she talks about this self-esteem trap. And the self-esteem trap is basically the idea that we need to somehow be, we need to be good enough, or we need to be successful, we need to tick various boxes. I think I had a quotation from here now. Where is it? Let's see if I can find. I can remember it roughly. If I can't find it, but. I'll give you my version of it. It's basically something like we need to be successful and good-looking and wealthy and sexy and fun and serious. Oh, and spiritual as well. You know, there's like a whole box of things that you need to tick. But the thing is with self-esteem, even in those moments when we do feel good about ourselves, we feel like we're ticking quite a few of those boxes, it's a very conditioned sense of being kind to myself. I'm kind to myself if I keep these things. And even if we're able to do it, it's hard work, somehow keeping up with all of these things. And so she's really suggesting this move from self-esteem, which is always about judging us, ranking us, making ourselves feel okay because of a particular grade, if you like, to self-compassion, which is much more unconditional. Yeah. So simply, you know, in virtue of being here, of beings that feel, well, we don't need to start giving reasons for it. We just have that sense of, ah, I'm worthy of love. We're all worthy of love. There's a kind of relief there, not needing to prove ourselves in order to be like that. It frees us from this comparing mind. You know, how am I doing in comparison to others? Better, worse, good day, bad day. And she also talks in a way, when we find this friendliness to ourselves, we actually also start to motivate ourselves in a different way. Many of us have got used to the idea that the only way we're going to motivate ourselves is being quite harsh and unkind. You know, you really ought to meditate more. You ought to do more. What's wrong with you? Why are you not doing more? You're feeling tired. What have you got to feel tired about? You know, this kind of voice that's critical. And what she says very beautifully, actually, is that it's actually much more effective to motivate ourselves with words of love and friendliness. So it might be, you know, more like, ah, so maybe you don't quite feel like doing the meditation this morning, but I remember it helps sometimes. Yeah, why don't you give it a go? See how that is. Yeah, get to the cushion and see what happens. And you can see, again, I mean, obviously different people we know motivate us in different ways, but the kind voice, well, it's not only more friendly, but it's actually more effective. She's a researcher, actually. There's various research projects that back that up. It's actually more effective as a motivator. And so, yeah, when you do notice these more critical thoughts coming into the mind, which is, my sense is possibly almost universal, you know, pretty much everybody has these kind of thoughts that come in from time to time. It's very helpful to see those simply as thoughts, the patterns that arise, that pop into the mind. And again, even those we can respond to with friendliness, yeah, to ourselves. You may know that the Buddha called his critical thoughts Mara, you know, or various other things. So he personified this Mara character that tries to undermine the Buddha. And a very beautiful passage where the Buddha invites Mara to tea. And that, I think, is a very skillful way of being with that. So we don't defeat Mara by using Mara's weapons. You know, go away. I don't want to hear you anymore. But actually by inviting Mara to tea, the Buddha says something like, it must be really hard to be so critical all day. It must be really hard to be Mara. And Mara says, yeah, it's exhausting. You know. You know. So again, there can even be times, and it's hard to, well, we certainly can't make this as a demand, but there are even times when our mind can become quite funny. You might even see that relationship even to critical thought. Oh, it's that old story again. There you go. It's okay. I've heard you. Thanks very much. Back to the breath. You know. But the more we treat it as something kind of solid and real and threatening that we need to battle, the stronger it will feel. But again, turning friendliness towards it, seeing its insubstantiality, actually, is very helpful. And the last thing I wanted to speak about this morning is what's called in the traditional loving kindness practice the more neutral person. More neutral person. So this is someone for whom we don't have strong feelings of like or dislike. And by the way, it may well be the case that there isn't such a thing as a completely neutral person. Often people say that, well, as soon as I start to think of somebody, they, you know, there's a little bit of liking or disliking. So there's no need to feel, I need to find the perfectly neutral person. But someone who's in that middle ground. And when we think about it, it actually might be most people are in that kind of space. So So when I walk through Nottingham, where I live, it's probably the case. You know, I'm walking down the street and occasionally I see a friend or someone who looks kind of really interesting to me, and I might notice them. And then also sometimes I might see someone who's a bit threatening for me in some way. I don't know what it is, but I can feel my threat system activating a bit. But most people, they're just walking the other way. And they may not register particularly. You know? And so it's a very, very beautiful thing to bring these thoughts of friendliness to these more neutral people. And we can really do this using our imagination. So the phrases I like, again, is, you know, just like me, this person has hopes and fears, good days and bad days, people who love them, people they love. So again, just bringing those thoughts to mind begins to make that person a bit more three-dimensional. You know, you can even sort of wonder what's happening in their life. What do they care about? What are they worried about? What's happening for them? And again, we don't need to get really drawn into all the details of that, but it just begins to enrich our sense of who this person is. So some examples of who you might choose, it might be, say, somebody who works in a shop that you go to regularly. This is a kind of classic example, somebody who serves in a shop. It might be somebody who lives nearby you. For many of us, it probably isn't your next-door neighbor who you're likely to have more of a feeling of liking or disliking around. But it might be somebody who lives at, you know, you see them on the street, say, but you've never really had much to do with them. Or if you're working, it might be someone who works in the same building, but perhaps a different department. Yeah. So you can see these people. And it's a very powerful practice. So this is Joseph Goldstein. I'm in this phase of my life where I can probably just about read that without my glasses. I think I'll be kind to myself. He says, when I first began the practice of metta, I had an experience that revealed a lot about my mind and the way I was relating to others. At that time, I was developing loving kindness towards a neutral person, although I wasn't really sure what a neutral person meant. My teacher, Anagarika Munindra, simply said to pick someone nearby for whom I didn't have much feeling one way or another. I was in India at the time, and there was an old gardener at the little monastery where I was staying. I saw him every day, but I'd never really given him any thought at all. He was just someone I noticed in passing. It was quite startling to realize how many such people there were around me, beings for whom I had completely neutral feelings. That in itself was an illuminating discovery. So every day for weeks, I began visualizing this old gardener in my meditation, repeating phrases like, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you be free from suffering. After a while, I began to feel great warmth and caring for him, and every time we passed, my heart just opened. This was a great turning point in my practice. I understood that how I feel about someone is up to me, and that my feelings do not ultimately depend on the person, his or her behavior, or the situation. The gardener remained the same. He didn't change what he was doing or how he related to me. But because of a turn in my own understanding and practice, my heart began to fill with genuine feelings of kindness and care. So, yeah, in a moment we'll do a practice together. I'll guide us through a practice. But maybe just taking a minute or two if you wanted to stand or move your posture before we do that. So whenever you feel ready, beginning to take your seat. Oh, beginning to arrive in the posture. Allowing the attention to come into the body and to move down in the body into the legs and into the feet. And as we've been doing, really sensing the contact with the ground, the connection with the earth. And as much as feels possible, bringing a sense of freshness to this now. Been doing this for a couple of days, but what's it like to feel it right now? To feel the ground beneath you? Maybe some sense of temperature or tingling, aches or twinges. Just noticing. If it's useful, this image of a tree with its roots deep down into the earth, sensing this contact with the ground, connection with the earth. Also the sense of really taking your seat here and now. How does that feel? You feel the body on the cushion or chair, the bench. And there can be this sense of really taking your seat. Feeling this contact, and also symbolically taking the seat of awareness, of presence. Checking in with other parts of the body. So as much as feels possible, allowing the hands to be at ease, the fingers and thumbs, backs of the hands and the palms. Giving some attention to the shoulders. How do they feel right now? Allowing the awareness just to meet whatever's there. And then noticing the face. Soft intention to let go of any frown. Notice those muscles around the eyes. And to be aware of the jaw. So these are places sometimes when we're really trying too hard in the practice. You may notice a tension around the eyes or a clenching in the jaw. So again, a gentle invitation to soften. Widening the awareness to a sense of the whole body, all the way from the toes to the top of the head. perhaps also a sense of the space around the body. Whole body. And within this embodied awareness, allowing the attention just to rest with the breathing, the in-breath and out-breath. Or if it feels more skillful for you, with the sound. And from this space of body and breath, bringing to mind a person for whom it's relatively easy to begin to sense this friendliness, bringing to mind the easy person or the easy being. Maybe somebody who's helped you out, who's taken care of you. Someone you've never met but admire. Or a favorite pet, perhaps. Seeing who comes to mind. An image or a sense of this person, being, maybe they're smiling, how is it to be in the presence of this friendly being? And from there we can begin to drop in some phrases of well-wishing. So just as if you were dropping a pebble into a pond and were sensitive to the ripples on the water, dropping in these phrases and noticing echoes. So may you be safe and well. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease. as much as feels possible, being really gentle and friendly. Those times when you notice the mind is drawn away to a train of thought or a story, a plan or a memory. Really letting in that it's okay, it's okay. So these moments too can be met with friendliness. It's just what our minds tend to do. It's okay. And that attitude can shape how we come back to the body, to the breath. And then allowing the sense of this person or being to gently fade into the background of awareness. And checking in again, the feet on the floor or the legs on the ground, the seat. And the breath. And from this embodied awareness, beginning to offer these phrases of well-wishing to yourself. Just from time to time, dropping them in. May I be safe and well. May I be peaceful. May I live with ease. Remembering that these phrases are not a demand that we feel a particular way, but inviting a friendly attitude, a friendly meeting, a friendly connection with whatever's here. So if more difficult thoughts or feelings or sensations are around, as much as feels possible, those too can be met with this friendly awareness. May I be safe and well. May I be peaceful. May I live with ease in the midst of whatever's here. May I live with ease. Staying connected with the body and the breath. If it feels okay bringing to mind someone who for you is more neutral, for whom there are no strong feelings of like and dislike, maybe someone who lives or works nearby, someone you see in a shop, maybe someone who delivers things for you. Seeing who comes to mind. An image or a sense of this person. And reflecting, yeah, just like me. They wish to be happy, don't wish to suffer. They have good days and bad days, hopes and fears. People they love and people who love them. So beginning to connect on this basic human level. As you wish them well. May you be safe and well. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease. Maybe you can sense this person smiling. Seeing them do their daily activities. remembering they too have hopes and fears, ups and downs, joys and sorrows. Wishing them well. And then allowing the image or sense of this person to gently fade into the background. Feeling the body and the breath. And then allowing the sense of friendliness to begin to expand and to include all of us as we practice together. Open to a sense of receiving the good wishes of others, as well as offering these. May we be safe and well. May we be peaceful. May we live with ease in the midst of whatever else is here for us. If it feels helpful, you may feel or imagine that these good wishes can fill the space, permeate the space, suffuse space around us, space within us. These good wishes can continue to expand, beginning to move out in all directions, to the north and south, east and west, moving out above and below, in all directions. Including the people, the birds, the animals, all the beings in all directions. Perhaps sensing how this friendliness can be boundless, without limit, in all directions. beings be safe and well. May all beings be peaceful. And in the midst of the joys and the sorrows of this life, may all beings live with ease. May all beings be free. As we come towards the end of the practice, letting any images and phrases just soften into the background, returning to the simplicity of this moment, body, breathing, sounds coming and going. Held with this friendly, loving, and caring awareness here and now.